About 100 cities and boroughs across Alaska levy a sales tax. Many also levy taxes on hotel rooms, alcohol, tobacco, commercial fish harvests, car rentals, and more. Combined, those taxes raised more than $350 million for cities and boroughs in 2016. Join us as we discuss local taxes and the debates on Talk of Alaska.
Talk of Alaska is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters.
This is Larry Pursley, Talk of Alaska, and we're going to talk sales tax today. Though the state's most populous municipalities, Anchorage, Fairbanks, North Star Borough, Matanuska, Susitna Borough, do not levy a sales tax, just about every other city and borough in the state does. And then you even have some cities within those non-tax boroughs that have their local city sales tax, such as North Pole, Palmer, Wasilla. The more than 100 Alaska cities and boroughs with a sales tax and or excise taxes, such as hotel bed taxes, alcohol taxes, they raised more than $350 million in 2016. Those taxes have long been a significant part of local revenues in Alaska, but as state budget cuts are coming down, increasing numbers of cities and boroughs are finding they're squeezed, more demand for local services, less financial help. About two dozen municipalities last year looked at raising local tax revenues. And meanwhile, on a statewide level, many elected officials have talked about a statewide sales tax at some point. 45 states across the country have a sales tax. We're going to discuss local taxes today on Talk of Alaska. And joining me is Dan Dickinson, a CPA and former director of the tax division at the Alaska Department of Revenue. Thanks for coming in, Dan.
My pleasure.
So, sales tax. Start with Dan. Top three problems if you are putting in a new sales tax, or what are the top three decisions a community, whether it's municipality or state, top three that they face in running a sales tax?
Actually, they're very non-technical questions. I mean, I think the first question is, why are you doing it? How will the money be used? Generally, you want the tax to be fair. You want there to be some relationship between who's paying it and who's receiving the benefit. And so you're trying to get into, you know, just what are you trying to accomplish? Are you replacing another revenue source? Are you building something specific? Are you going to provide a specific service that hasn't been provided before? So it's those very conceptual questions that drive the sort of the nitty-gritty of how the tax is going to be administered.
I was going to say an example. I think it was Wasilla last year approved a sales tax increase specifically to pay for a new police station. So some are project specific, some just general government.
Correct. And I think it's probably generally an easier sell when you're trying to tell people, okay, here's what we're going to build this. Here's how much it's going to cost. Here's how we're going to raise that revenue. And people sort of, it's literally like, you know, you're selling lottery tickets or something like that for a good cause. So the basic question is what you're trying to accomplish. The second question is, what's the consequence of that tax going to be? I mean, because there are usually going to be consequences, both unintended, perhaps, maybe even unforeseen, and as well some intended ones. There's lots of studies done. You know, when you put a tax in, it changes spending patterns, maybe not dramatically, but people are aware that the costs of something have gone up. There's going to be a tax on it. If it's an excise tax on a specific thing, they may try to find alternatives. If it's a general sales tax, they may look for shopping in other ways. And there are other sort of consequences from behavior. And I think that one of the things you'll find when people talk about tax, in general, the better a tax that is very broad, so you don't spend lots of time fighting about exemptions and what's in and what's out, and it's low as a consequence. It taxes lots of things, but it does it at a very low rate so you don't distort sort of the decision making.
Because if you have a dollar amount that you want to raise, but you have a lot of exemptions, then you're going to have a higher percentage.
Exactly. Exactly. You know, it's the Lucy's, the famous, you know, Lucy in the Peanuts cartoon, she has a lemonade stand.
Oh, I thought you were going to tell me about she pulls the football away.
No. She has a glass of lemonade, and one glass is $10. And she says, I only have to sell one of them, and I reach my goal. So the third question, because you asked me for the top three, would then be what are the actual design issues? You know, what is being taxed? And then becomes the big question of what is exempted. And I think particularly if you look at in Alaska and you look at the sales taxes, lots of people make cases, gee, this shouldn't be taxed. Medical, in a time of stress, should you be taxing mortuary services? How about food? You know, these are poor. The list sort of goes on and on. Gee, what about school? Back to school clothing.
So summer camps, Bible camps.
Exactly. Yeah. So there's this huge thing of what is exempted. Then you get into who is exempted. Are there certain people who, just by their very nature, I think Juno has a exemption. So if you're over, I believe, 65, a senior, you can go in and show your exemption pass, and you're exempt from some of the sales taxes.
Right. Now, they have scaled that back a couple years ago. But let me just say, before we get more into exemptions, it's Talk of Alaska. We're talking about sales taxes. And if you have questions, the call-in number is 1-800-478-8255. If you're calling from Anchorage, that's 550-8422. Or if you want to email, it's talk@alaskapublic.org. Dan, we were just starting to talk about exemptions. You're right. Juno used to exempt. If you're a senior, you get your card, you make purchases, no tax. And what they found is, and this is not meant as a pejorative comment to my fellow seniors, a lot of seniors were buying multiple washers and dryers and furniture for all their relatives and friends. So they did scale it back and reduced the items that could be purchased tax-exempt by seniors. But you're right, it's still an exemption. It means everyone else picks up the burden.
Right. So that's a second piece, is just looking at who pays the tax, who doesn't, churches, governments, all kinds of entities by their nature, should they not be paying tax. The third one is, when are you going to tax? We've heard a lot of discussion about seasonal sales taxes, particularly if you're looking to raise money from tourists. There are a lot of towns in Alaska, in which the amount of activity at the cash registers is much higher during the tourist season than not. So you can have a seasonal sales tax. In the lower 48, you'll find lots of places have tax holidays, particularly popular back to school tax holidays for clothes, but lots of other things get covered. So a question of when you're going to pay the tax. So who, what, when, where, all those questions. And again, the big picture is you need to know what you're trying to accomplish, but the more time and effort you spend on trying to make all these little distinctions, so how do you prove that somebody's a senior, or does a senior get certain goods, et cetera, et cetera?
Well, and then it's work for the merchants, because with the senior exemption, the merchant who could be subject to audit has to keep a log of the senior purchase and the date and their tax exempt number. You mentioned seasonal sales tax in the Kenai Peninsula Borough. Groceries, food, is taxed effectively only during the summer months when there are a lot of visitors there. During the rest of the year, fall, winter, you don't pay sales tax on food. So it kind of gets to your point. You want to benefit locals, shift the burden as much as possible to non-residents or visitors or guests. So there's a lot of those kind of judgment calls in sales tax. What are some of the other common exemptions that we see in sales tax?
Medical is generally allowed. Subscriptions to magazines, sort of the free press or whatever. farm supplies, things that might go into raising food. Real property.
Real property, I mean, if I sell my house.
If you sell your house, exactly.
Though some states have real estate transfer taxes.
Right. And typically, it's considered more an excise tax, or in a lot of places, it's called a stamp tax, because you need that stamp on the document before it becomes legal. Food. But again, it's usually prepared food, prepared food is not exempted.
Right. If I buy a loaf of bread and some sliced turkey, that's non-prepared food, that probably in many places is going to be exempt. If I buy the pre-made sandwich at the deli counter, that's prepared food.
Exactly.
Can be taxable.
And then the grocer has to spend a lot of time thinking, if I take the cantaloupe and I cut it in half and I scoop out the seeds and I put a little decorative thing around it, is that prepared food or not? And again, these sound trivial, but if you go into a contemporary grocery store, there's lots and lots and lots of little decisions.
Right. And they may sound trivial, but there again, it gets to, you're putting a lot of the burden on the merchants to figure out from the code book, well, is the melon taxable, but if I cut it up, is it non-taxable?
Right. And so typically what you do is you'll go to, you'll dump it into someone else's problem. So you'll say, well, if it qualifies for food stamps, for example. So we don't have to make our own rules, but that still leaves somebody going now looking at the voluminous rules that come in on food stamps. Construction materials, childcare, things that you're going to resell. Occasional sales. So if you have a garage sale, but you know, then you go to a church might have a garage sale type thing every weekend where it brings in. So you know, churches, there'll be. So there's lots of exemptions that rules that get drawn around it. The sale for resale and the sale for construction or manufacturing gets particularly problematic because I may go to the hardware store, you know, to buy a can of nails, and if it's just you know be for my backyard project, it's taxable. But if it's going to go into a building that I'm going to sell, it's not taxable. And so that's where you typically get into exemption certificates, and a company will be exempt at the cash register, but then they'll have to file their own return that shows of what I purchased, here's how I can prove it went into a sale for resale or not.
Or pay the tax directly themselves.
And then they'll pay the tax directly themselves.
Which gets to the point, sales tax is not always that easy. This is Talk of Alaska, 1-800-478-8255. Anchorage 550-8422. We have Don from Anchorage.
Yes, sir. Good morning. You're on my favorite topic. I've been after the governor's office for a long time. I've been up here since 68. I've been trying to explain to these people a sales tax in most cases is something that you can set a deadline on. You can say, okay, we're just going to do this for 3 years. As you already stipulated, you can do it and target certain issues like a new library or whatever. And for some reason, we can't seem to get the legislature to move on it. And even as a temporary fill-in on the gap for fiscal accountability until we can get something better. And a sales tax, I've been up here in Fairbanks. I've seen it when Fairbanks had a sales tax. And it is probably the quickest and easiest way to invoke a tax and control it. And most importantly of all, it covers everybody. You get into a tax situation for income, and you got exemptions coming out of your ears. And the next thing you know, the more you spend, the less your tax. And that's grossly unfair.
Okay.
On the other hand, if you get a sales tax, you collect it from whoever has more money is going to spend more money. Whoever makes money legally or illegally is still going to spend it. It doesn't matter whether a prostitute, drug dealer, car dealer, or who it is, you're collecting the tax from them.
I'll
get off the wire and let you go. Thank you.
But I think it's a good observation to make because Don made a very good point. You know, the debate about caps sounds like
that's what I was going to ask. Maybe we can explain caps because most of the Alaska cities and boroughs that have a sales tax have a point at which the tax stops.
Right. So Don's point was what he likes about the sales tax in terms of its fairness is if you're out there and you're spending money and you spend $1 million, you get taxed for $1 million. And if your person doesn't have those kind of means and you spend $10 or $20, you get taxed on that. So that it's very fair. But if there's a cap so that each transaction, say, is taxed the first $1,000 or let's say the first $500 is taxed, if I go out and I buy a $50,000 Mercedes-Benz or I get, you know, a clunker off the lot, both of those are going to be more than $1,000. I'm going to pay the same tax. So, you know, the notion that Don brought up was very good in the purest sense, but I think you'll find most municipalities, most states that do it, don't have that. It doesn't take advantage of that. And in fact, it caps it, and that, in effect, is one of the reasons why it's viewed generally as a regressive tax.
Right. So in Alaska, I believe that City of North Pole has the lowest cap. You pay sales tax on up to the first $200 of a purchase, and then the tax stops. The Kenai Peninsula Borough has had a $500 stop on not $500 in sales tax, but if you spend $1,000 at the store, you only pay tax on $500.
Right. So at 3%, so for example, as a practical matter, I see lots of invoices because they do a lot of work with oil and gas in Kenai. $15. It's a $15
tax. Right, 3% for
$15. Tax. Yep.
And that has been at a $500 cap since the sales tax was adopted more than 50 years ago. And then there are places, I believe Juneau, the cap is $12,500 of a purchase. But, and this sort of gets to Dan's point, who are you trying to tax? There is no cap. There is no limitation on sales tax on jewelry purchases in Juneau, because who's going to spend more than $12,000 on a piece of jewelry except a tourist? And you want them to pay the entire tax cap. There are some rural bush communities in Alaska that don't have a sales tax cap, except they do for ATVs and boats and motors that are purchased by locals. Let's get back to exemptions. So you have some federal laws. You cannot tax interstate commerce. So Alaska, as much as we would like to tax the million cruise ship tickets that they buy, can't tax the cruise ship travel up here or interstate airlines. And there's actually a state statute that prohibits municipalities from taxing sightseeing flights in Alaska. So there are it's complicated.
And you know, generally, I think your point is well taken. You look at local activity. My favorite one, looking through the statute books in preparation for this program, Juneau exempts lobbying services because generally things you want to encourage you, you don't tax. And you mentioned the you know, looking at cruise ships. There is a state excise tax, which is distinct from a sales tax,
which people often refer to as the cruise ship passenger head tax.
Exactly. And that basically looks at, you know, it doesn't look at the price of it. It says how many people are on the ship, you know, how many beds are there, are filled, and then there's a charge. $34.50 for each of those, and that tends to be an indirect tax. In other words, sometimes the ship is ultimately responsible. The company, the cruise company, is ultimately responsible for it. They'll sometimes show it on the ticket to say, "Gee, here's our price, and here's the additional amount." The same way when you buy an airline ticket, you'll say, "Okay, here's the price of the ticket, and then here are the taxes and fees on top." It is the airline or the cruise ship company that's responsible for those excise taxes. They're just sort of showing you, hey, this is pass through. It's not really us taking that portion.
Right.
Of money.
And anybody who buys a plane ticket sees all the taxes and fees that are there. This is Talk of Alaska, local sales taxes or sales tax, excise tax in general, 800-478-8255. Anchorage, it's 550-8422. I'm here with Anchorage CPA and former state tax official Dan Dickinson. So state statute requires a vote of the public if you're going to do a sales tax. But you had mentioned, Dan, there's also excise taxes, which under state statute, a municipal governing body, a city council assembly, can adopt an excise tax without going to a vote of the public, unless they have their own law, and certainly there's political issues. What's the difference between a sales tax, which is general, excise tax, which tends to be targeted?
Right, and I think you've really gotten the main point. There's not a bright line among the characteristics. Generally, a excise tax will be indirect. It'll be paid by the manufacturer. It'll be paid by the importer, not by the ultimate user. And also, generally, it's based not on price, but on a unit. So an excise tax on coal is per ton. The excise tax that we pay, for example, on gasoline, 8 cents a gallon.
Right.
Most states, cigarettes, it's per stick. Alaska is one of the states that we happen to have a tax. 75% of the retail cost gets added. So that's an unusual one.
Right, but most it's 2 cents a cigarette or 1 cent a cigarette.
Exactly. Yeah. So the main characteristics are it's indirect. In other words, it's paid by the supplier, and it's something that you can count, figure out the value of, or the taxable base of by looking at it. And you know, the federal, there's a lot of federal excise taxes.
Well, you had found some on arrows, bows, quivers?
Yeah, I think, and I don't know, as we were discussing about this, I think there's a whole lot of, you know, sports fishing, bait boxes, tackle boxes. There's a whole lot of things. I think that's a very specific excise tax that then is fed back into federal fisheries programs. And so I think you'll see with a lot of excise taxes, because they're very specific to something, they then tend to be fed back. For example, in the state of Alaska, there's a tax. It's called a fee in the statute book, but it's essentially a tax on studded tires, which then is supposed to go under the Constitution. It can't be dedicated, but it's supposed to go then back to the roads to fix the damage that studded tires do.
Right. And it's a per tire fee, regardless whether you bought a $50 tire or a $100 tire. It's the same fee.
Exactly. Exactly.
Right. And in Alaska, it's motor fuel, studded tires, cigarettes, tobacco products, alcohol are probably the more well-known excise taxes.
Yeah, I think what are generally called sin taxes are a subset of excise taxes.
Right. Right. And the Department of Transportation has to fix the ruts in the road caused by studded tires, probably would call studded tires a sin. So we have Mike from Kodiak.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Appreciate the discussion. The excise tax you're talking about on fishing is Dingle Johnson and Pittman Robertson.
Oh, I knew it had a name I couldn't remember. Thank you.
Yeah. I've always supported sales taxes being managed at the local level because it's just easier. You have proprietary information. And then the other thing that's always left out of the conversation is that in the bush, the sales tax is one of the tools they have for managing alcohol. What I've always supported is an income tax, and there's different ways we could do that, but I would like to see an income tax that gives a deduction for local property tax payment. And as you know, we have a lot of areas that don't pay a property tax, and yet they receive state services. And on top of that, what's missing out of your discussion is Title 29 allows...
That's Title 29 of state statute.
Yeah, allows a seasonal sales tax. So if Anchorage wanted to have a four-month tax, they could under Title 29 and then go tax-free the rest of the year. I was in Fairbanks in the 70s, and they went to check their revenues. I was told by a worker years later, they went to check their revenue in the late 70s to see how they were approaching their budget projections, and they were over $25 million over projections. They had $25 million extra revenue when they had a sales tax. And sales taxes are just better managed at the local level. If you start a state sales tax, you're going to have to set up a huge bureaucracy, whereas an income tax, you're just ponying on to the federal income tax.
Well, and certainly Alaskans have seen the sales tax versus income tax debate at the state level for several years now to help fill the budget gap, and my guess is that is going to continue. I appreciate your comments on that. You know, you talked about municipalities, and I was trying to make that point at the beginning, that you have cities and boroughs across Alaska, about 100 of them, their fiscal structure, their local funding for education and everything else is based on sales tax, some cases also property tax. So that's been an argument by many people that that's a municipal purview and the state shouldn't mess in this. What we're seeing now, as states are seeing their finances squeezed, they are looking at either new sales taxes or changes in sales taxes. The Matsu Borough has a sales tax task force looking at it. There was a alcohol tax increase recently in Bethel, the temporary sales tax increase in Wasilla, pay for a new police station. They raised the sales tax cap in the city of Kodiak, a new cigarette tax, Kodiak Borough. Huna in Southeast a year ago approved an excise tax on alcohol and an excise tax on tobacco. We've got Joe from Sutton. Something to add to this, Joe?
Yeah, I come from the Midwest, and they have toll roads there. They made those tolls, and they said it was just until they paid for the roads. That was back in the early 60s. They're still paying tolls there. It turned into such a honeypot that nobody wants to dismantle it. Now, is that Wasilla Police Station built? Have they stopped those taxes?
No, the tax was just approved, so it hasn't. They haven't moved into the police station. I'm not even sure they started construction.
I bet they're not going to. I bet that tax is going to be an institution after that.
Well, that'll be up to the Wasilla City Council and voters there to decide how to fund their operations. But you're right. I guess that gets to the point of, does the public really trust its elected officials on taxes? And my guess is that debate will probably go on until the meteor hits the earth.
Good luck.
Okay. Yeah.
And I think, Joe, another observation that you made, and I think it's true, you know, going from a 0% to a 1% sales tax, in other words, implementing a tax, is probably a lot more difficult than going from a 1% to a 2%.
Sure, so, it's easier administratively just to raise it.
Exactly. So the administration, the initial setting up is difficult. Once it's there, then the rate is something that can go up or down, although some might challenge it. They tend to go up more often than they go down.
Okay. Dan, we have an online, someone sent us an email question. They run a wholesale company, and they're saying, gee, if you tax what I sell, then it's going to be taxed twice at the retail level. Generally, if I'm selling something for resale, it's only supposed to be taxed at the final customer purchase.
That's correct, yes. So generally, a sale for resale, that would typically, and typically a company like that would pay its own taxes. It would go out and figure out, okay, I brought this in, or I went out and purchased these things, I didn't pay tax on them, but these things I got and I used in my displays or something, so they weren't for resale, so those I'll have to pay tax on. So, but the wholesaler, the things that are wholesaled in and retailed out, those should definitely not be taxed on the end.
So generally, let's say I'm a woodworker. So I buy wood, maybe I buy stains, I do my work, and I sell my finished piece. Generally, would I have to pay sales tax on the goods that go into the finished product that gets sold retail?
Generally, no.
Right.
That's the idea. And then let's say you use drill bits. So the drill bit never shows up in your final product, but gosh, you have to throw them away after you've used them and resharpened them. Should that be in or out? Those on the margins, you can get into the arguments. But if it's for actual becomes part of a product that you sell, no, it should not be subject to tax twice.
And this gets to the issue that sales tax is probably more complicated. And when you look at municipal code books, cities and boroughs across Alaska, there are a lot of definitions of what's a good for resale, what is a component, what is manufacturing process, what's exempted, the requirements for proof and audits.
Exactly. And one of the things we make it into is the streamlined sales tax project. But what that was an attempt was to try to get rid of all that complexity to say, okay, if we're going to have a definition as to what constitutes clothing and what constitutes jewelry, or what's the difference between prepared food and non-prepared food, let's have one set of standards. So if a state comes and signs on, then they accept all those definitions. If I'm collecting, if I'm, say, Amazon and I'm selling into these places and I have to figure out whether they're exempt or not, at least I have one set of rules that I can go and look at, as opposed to this multiplicity. But it definitely, you know, you lose local control over making those definitions.
Right. And one thing we talked about earlier is you don't want a tax that's going to hurt your own economy or unduly influence people's decisions so they go somewhere else. But there are some protections against that. For example, two states I'm familiar with, Washington State and North Dakota, that both have a sales tax. If you think you're going to escape the sales tax by buying your car in Oregon or another state and bring it home, when you go to register it to get your plates and your tags, you have to pay the sales tax, or you can't legally register your car and get plates. So for vehicles, at least, there is that way for a state to keep people from crossing state lines and bringing in a car tax-free.
Right. So, you know, generally, when people think about a sales tax, they usually think of it as a cash register tax. But in fact, there's that whole other dimension. And just to make an analogy, which may not be helpful, you know, if you think about an income tax and all those dimensions, and then you compare that, say, to what the governor's proposed, which is a payroll tax, it takes one very visible piece, one very easily administered piece, does the tax there, but it sort of sidesteps all the more complex questions that you get if you're trying to reach everybody or tax everything and be a broad tax.
This is Talk of Alaska, 1-800-478-8255. 550-8422 in Anchorage. Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
The Federal Subsistence Board is accepting applications through February 2nd to fill seats on the 10 Subsistence Regional Advisory Councils. Councils meet at least twice a year and provide critical advice to the board on subsistence management issues. Individuals may apply or nominate someone for membership. More at doi.gov/subsistence/regions or call 800-478-1456. This message is sponsored by the Office of Subsistence Management.
This is Talk of Alaska. I'm here today, this is Larry Pursley with Dan Dickinson, my guest, a CPA and someone who thinks a lot about taxes. We're talking about sales taxes, 800-478-8255 or from Anchorage 550-8422. Let's talk about online sales. People talk a lot about that. Why can't we just tax online sales and not local sales? And why can't we tax? So we'll start with that, Dan. Can you legally adopt a sales tax on online sale and not local sales?
No. So there is, and let's make a distinction here. Again, it may sound like it's being pedantic, but I think it's important. You can levy a tax on something, but how you go about collecting it is absolutely critical.
Right.
With a sales tax, sales taxes are actually called sales and use taxes. And Larry gave some of the examples of other ways that you can go and collect the use of a vehicle if you didn't actually do the sale in the state. But for most things, the things you buy from Amazon, for example, or other online retailers, if the sale is not collected if the tax is not collected at the time of the sale, it isn't going to be taxed. Most states have a requirement, a use tax piece. You're supposed to pay your use tax. Nobody does. No state actively pursues trying to collect those.
Right. Some states that call it a sales and use tax, if they have and I was looking at this, Michigan has a personal income tax. On the income tax form, there's a line for you to self-report purchases you made out of state and used in Michigan. And the compliance level's 1%, if that. Well, Dan, maybe we can explain, go back to 1992.
Right. Quill.
Quill. Right. Quill. Which has nothing to do with birds. But Quill was a U.S. Supreme Court decision that pretty much shut the door on taxing online sales. Though in 1992, online sales were not where they are in 2018. So what's Quill?
It's very interesting. So Quill basically set what's called the physical presence standard. A company has to have a physical presence before you can require
a physical presence in your state.
Yeah. In the state before you can require it to collect taxes on its sales. It has to have employees. It have to have warehouses. Just because it calls in, it has salespeople that call, or it has flyers that get distributed, or it uses common carriers to transport the goods in, that's not good enough. There has to be either employees or physical goods.
Right, a warehouse, a retail store, a sales office, something.
Right. And the Quill decision, incidentally, for those who are really political geeks here, if you look at the full name of it, it's Quill versus Commissioner of North Dakota Revenue Heitkamp. And as you're probably aware, Heidi Heitkamp is now the U.S. Senator.
And Quill was an office supply company that did catalog sales.
Correct. And you know, one of the arguments that was raised was, gee, we have all these catalogs. They fill our landfill. Can't we, you know, isn't that a taxable event? Nope, that was not
right,
enough.
They're leaving their mess behind. Before we go on with online sales, let's just take a call from Dan in Dillingham. Are you
yes,
there?
Hello.
Hi, Dan. Go ahead.
Yeah, good morning. Say, appreciate you having this talk. It's good for the whole state. I see a real difference between the large populations in the state that don't have sales taxes, seem to advocate for a statewide sales tax, and while us Bush residents and other places that have a sales tax are talking income tax. And to add on to what the man from Kodiak said, you know, a lot of small communities survive on their sales tax. Dillingham has recently raised their tax levels. We got a 6% sales tax already. You add some state sales tax onto that, it's really high. And then keep in mind, percentage-wise, these things are applied. Bush prices are huge. So, like, our milk is like $7 a gallon. Places, it's much higher. Fuel can be anywhere from 4 or something a gallon to $11 a gallon. Pot of bread, I've seen it at up $11 a box. I've talked to small storekeepers in remote areas, and adding a sales tax would just whack them.
Right.
And yet if we had an income tax, it might be more uniformly applied.
Right.
More fair.
No, Dan, you make good points. And that's been one of the arguments in the legislature and around the state in recent years, that a sales tax, as Dan pointed out, is a flat percentage. A sales tax on a gallon of milk is going to cost someone in Dillingham a lot more than someone who can buy their milk for $3 a gallon in Anchorage. So you make a good point. Dan, certainly Bush, Alaska, buys a lot online, so let's get back. I was looking, actually, did some research. University of Tennessee economic researchers looked at it, and they said estimate. In 2015, the inability to tax all the online sales cost states more than $17 billion in lost revenue, which is half again as much as the lost revenue in 2012 as online sales grow. So this is becoming more and more of an issue.
Yeah, to go back to the sort of the history of Quill, in the 60s, the Supreme Court said, yeah, you need to have a physical presence. And then in the 1990s, North Dakota said, gee, we're going to challenge this. We think that the underlying social, economic, commercial, legal innovations have changed so much from the 1960s to the 1990s that we're going to challenge it. We're going to levy this tax on remote sellers, and Quill challenged them, went to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court told North Dakota, no, you're not. We still are going to maintain this physical presence standard. Think of how much change there's been since the 1990s to now in terms of online selling. I think, you know, Larry's numbers, I mean, just every year the amount of commerce goes up that comes in from online.
I think North Dakota, or Amazon bought North Dakota this morning.
That
might have been.
Probably off the news cycle already. It's so quick. In 2015, in sort of a totally different case, Judge Kennedy, who's often a swing vote on the Supreme Court.
U.S. Supreme Court, Justice Kennedy.
Sort of dropped a footnote that said, gee, we really should look at this physical presence standard.
He invited the court or someone to say, hey, take another look at Quill.
And a number of states said, okay, we will. And they basically put in laws that said we're going to tax. Interestingly enough, coincidentally, it's South Dakota's that sort of won the race. Their case is going to be heard in the Supreme Court.
Right. Supreme Court's agreed to hear this sales tax issue, online sales. So by the time the court adjourns in June 2018, we'll know, can you go after online or not?
Right. And again, by what they would say is, let's say they had a new standard that said, you know, if you make significant numbers of sales, you have to collect the sales tax when you make that sale. It's always been taxable. It's just the physical question of when it's going to get taxed, how it's going to be remitted back.
If the states have a legal ability to force someone to collect it. Let's take a break from online sales and take a call. John from Wasilla.
Yes, hello.
Hi, John.
Yeah, I have a comment regarding the fellow from Sutton who called up.
Sure.
About the sunsetting of the sales tax. Actually, Wasilla's on its third time. I was a resident the first two times. They increased the sales tax at the vote of the people. The first time was to finance the Menard Sports Center.
I remember that.
And then after that, it was the Wasilla Library. Both times it was voted in. This time it looks like I was not a city resident during this last vote for the police department. Looks like they increased the sales tax by 1% this time.
Right.
Previously it was like 0.5% each time. And again, it was set up to sunset at the vote of the people. So
right. That's
these
a good
taxes do can be altered and go away. And that'd be my comment about that.
Right. And that's a good history to bring up. Juneau has a 5% sales tax. A portion of it has to be approved by voters. I think it's every 5 years, and it goes to specific projects rather than a general sales tax.
I think John made sort of two good points. One is, you know, mechanically you can set it up so it literally does sunset.
Right. Put a date in the ordinance and says this goes away. Right.
Exactly. On the other hand, once you tend to have that in place, people are used to paying a sales tax. They're used to seeing things get built. It probably becomes easier for it to keep going on. So I think it's a you sort of both sides of that argument are given evidence from that.
Getting back to the online sales, I followed a case last year in Colorado. Colorado wanted to tax Amazon, but Amazon had no physical presence in Colorado. So Colorado passed a law that said, okay, online sellers, if you don't want to voluntarily collect the tax, and we can't legally make you collect it because you have no legal physical presence here, you have to report to the state of Colorado every sale you make into Colorado, so we will go get it from the purchaser, the customer. And they went back and forth, and Amazon, anyway, they went to court, and the courts upheld the Colorado law. And Amazon finally said, ah, the heck with it. You're right. It'd be easier to collect the sales tax and give it to the state rather than report every sale to the state. So that was a way Colorado got around it.
A decade or so ago, AT&T said the biggest single cost of an incremental of a phone call was figuring out how to tax it.
Yeah, I've heard that. Every jurisdiction has
jurisdiction is different. Physical presence, because you have your literally your copper lines going through, and so this issue of how each state deals with it and what the different requirements are and how much effort the retailer has to put into it, whatever its cost to collect the tax, really is the underlying issue. So I think sort of initially the retailers are trying to fight the taxing, but generally their fallback position is whatever it is, make it simple, make it straightforward, so we don't have to incur a lot of costs administering it.
Right, and we can talk in a little bit about that streamlined sales tax project, but right now we have Matt from Sitka.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for taking the call.
Thanks for calling in.
An interesting discussion. Here in Sitka, we have an annual sales tax of 5%, but it goes up to 6% in the summer. So 6 months of 5 and 6 months of 6. If the state had a statewide sales tax, it would probably kill retail in Sitka, except for maybe grocery stores and gas stations. We're already, the local retailers are already having a hell of a time competing with online sales. And I think another 2 or 3% on that would just kill the rural economy or the everywhere that doesn't already have a sales tax. Have you guys considered that? I'm sure you have.
Well, I've considered it, but I'm not a legislator. I've never run for elected office since college, but that is, as we've talked earlier in the program, that is a fundamental point that keeps getting raised in this debate. My understanding is the highest municipal sales tax in Alaska is 7%. And certainly if you put a state tax on top of that, makes it that much harder to the local
Wrangell
government.
Wrangell has a 7% sales tax. It'd just kill Wrangell.
Yeah, it would.
Matt, can I ask you a question?
Go ahead.
So let's say it's in late August and you're about to make a big purchase. Do you go, I'm not going to make that purchase. I'm going to wait until September. In other words, does that extra 1% affect how you think about things when you're purchasing?
Not me, but they have a cap on I forget what it is. They just recently
gotcha.
Okay.
It.
So a big purchase.
I forget what it is. I think it's the first X thousands of dollars.
Yeah, makes sense. That's usually about the range of the taxes. Yeah. Yeah.
And I personally oppose that because once again it handicaps the local retailers. Like you buy an outboard, which is an outboard at $7,000 or something for a 40-horse outboard. And you could get it out of town and save hundreds of dollars, on the price.
Right. Well, I'm sorry.
It's just really scary for everywhere in Alaska that already has a significant sales tax to hear the debate about people in Anchorage saying, for instance, boy, it'd be great if we had a statewide sales tax. Well, it would kill retail in so many communities, and as you know, retail is struggling against online sales.
It is. So let's take another call, Don from Haines, and then we can go back, Dan, and I can talk about the streamlined sales tax, try to make it easier. Don.
Yes, good morning, sir, and thank you for taking the call. I'm a retired person on a fixed income, and I wanted to point out that sales tax is regressive taxation, meaning to say that it impacts most adversely on those persons least able to afford to pay the tax. Now, especially if you're taxing basic commodities like food and utilities and items that the handicapped, the disabled, the elderly, the persons, again, on fixed incomes, the retired people, it hits them really hard. And then we also, you also mentioned already, the out in the bush communities, they pay substantially more for their groceries than we would say in you would in Anchorage, as example. So you're really hitting the people hard that can least afford to pay it. A much more equitable type of taxation would be an income tax. Just tag it on to the federal income tax and make it a progressive taxation. That way it spreads the tax all over the general population, and those that can more afford to pay it can pay it, and those with the inability to pay it aren't punished by it.
Okay. Well, like I said, that's a political debate that's going on.
And so I think,
thank you, Don.
You know, we've had Don articulated the sort of the argument for sales tax versus income tax. An earlier caller articulated the sort of the opposite of why a sales tax was more equitable than income tax. And I think it's worth pointing out that if you go to most states, they've solved that argument by having both.
Right.
So we're really asking. New Hampshire has a form of an income tax, not wages, but other things are taxed. But basically, New Hampshire has a very, very high property tax, and that's what it relies on. In Alaska, of course, we rely mostly on oil and gas taxes. So it's part of it's this question of where are you going to move to from here, and how quickly maybe does Alaska look its fiscal system look more like other states?
Right, and we've been debating sales income here now for a while, and that's going to continue. I think this is Talk of Alaska, 800-478-8255, from Anchorage, 550-8422. Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. From one end of Alaska to the other and everywhere in between, public media works to provide quality programming and statewide news you can count on and news you can trust. Whether you're listening at home, at work, or in the car, we're grateful to be a part of your day. Thank you for tuning in.
This is Larry Pursley, Talk of Alaska, talking sales taxes with Dan Dickinson, a CPA in Anchorage, former director of the State Tax Division. Dan, you had mentioned the streamlined sales tax campaign effort. That's 18 years old, I think. So, and as you said, the idea is to make the rules simpler so AT&T doesn't have hundreds of thousands of pages of local codes. Why? Well, what would, briefly, what would it do, and why at 18 years is it still not done?
It's a voluntary association, so states can join.
Well, that cinches it. That's
right.
Why.
So states can join or not join, and to join you have to have a tax code that is substantially in compliance with a model tax code put forward by the Streamlined Sales Tax Project. So the idea is that you look at all the definitions of what's taxable and what isn't.
So there's consistency between the states. So that's what the model is for.
Exactly. Exactly. Now, you can decide to tax prepared food or not decide to tax, but the definition, the difference between prepared food and unprepared food will always be the same. You say, I'm not going to tax candy. I am going to tax candy, but at least I'll know whether it's candy or not.
So a business that maybe does business in 50 states, same definition of candy.
Exactly. Exactly. So they make the decision once it's taxable or it's not taxable. The second set of definitions are you can have whatever rates you want, and every place, every town, every city can be different, but the zip code, every zip code has to have the same tax, the tax rate.
Again, makes it easier for merchants if you're 99517 or 998, that tax is going to be same for that zip code, not
exactly. You literally have a database. This is, you know, going to be done electronically. It says, I'm shipping this package to zip code Y. I go look it up. They have a tax rate of 7%. Now, that might be 3% for the state, 2% for the municipality, and a 1.5% special stadium tax, and a 0.5% for a police station. But right. The point is, It's a single rate, and everyone in that zip code pays it. So the business who is shipping, let's use Amazon. They all seem to be the example.
Easy to pick on.
Exactly. So Amazon is shipping a parcel. They go and they say, okay, we know we go down this list of definitions. We can figure out whether it's a makeup or not makeup or food or something like that. We tax non-taxable, taxable, non-taxable, and we're shipping it to this address. We're going to add the following dollar amount to it, and boom, they're done. When they're done, they then send their records every month off to this to a vendor that's qualified under the Streamline project, and they go and figure out, okay, to use my prior example, here's the check we send to the state, right. Here's the check we send to the city. Here's
one
the
tax
check.
Return.
Exactly, and yeah. Then you send all the different checks out to all the different places.
So this Streamline sales tax project, 18 years, they're looking for an act of Congress, aren't they?
Ultimately, part of it was that if at some point they reached a certain percentage of the
critical mass
population, right, then the feds would step in and make this a nationwide requirement. I think now the focus is more, let's for the states that are members, let's get this going, let's get this all working, and for the states that are members, and particularly some of the larger states where Amazons of the world do have physical presence, those kinds of things, and then if and when Quill is overturned, this will all be in place.
Right. I wonder. Maybe Trump will mention Streamline sales tax in his State of the State tonight.
It depends if it's on the teleprompter or not. Yeah.
So, Ron from Anchorage, we'll take a call here.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Hi, Ron.
Hey, Ron.
I wanted to just bring up the concept of the income versus sales tax debate that there exists in the state of Alaska, especially in Bush, a large cash-based segment of society. And only income that's documented would be subject to an income or payroll.
Only
tax.
Right if you report it.
Well, again,
report it. There's a lot of handyman services on Craigslist that everybody pay taxes. The neighborhood snowplower. And then what about criminals and drug dealers? They go out and buy a lot of items, but I doubt very many of them are paying much taxes.
Right. So a lot of those transactions are subject to tax. It's a question of enforceability. As as you may know, Al Capone, they got Al Capone because he wasn't reporting all of his earnings.
Right. Eventually, they may catch up with you. It's a good point. That is part of that discussion out there, and enforcement and cost to collect the tax. So we have a caller, Jim from Eagle River. I think you were going to discuss.
Hello.
Hi, Jim. You're going to discuss the question of what's it cost to maintain a tax?
Yes, it costs a lot to maintain a sales tax. When Oregon was considering a tax, they calculated it would take 2 years to pay back the cost of instituting the sales tax. They'd get a net income of zero for the first 2 years on a 3% sales tax. Plus, you got to put people in jail that don't pay, that get into trouble in their small business and spend the tax receipts. It just seems like a pointless effort. We could save three times as much money by shutting down the pipeline. We subsidize the oil industry by $1 billion a year or more. For the last 3 years, we've gotten negative net income from the pipeline. So shut it down, save three times what we could generate from a 10% sales tax with no exemptions.
Okay, well, thank you.
And Jim, one observation. So most places, most states and cities that have sales taxes, they allow the vendor, the seller, to withhold a tiny portion.
Right, to cover their costs.
1 or 2 or 3%. Right. And in some cities, that's generally actually calculated when people look at the actual cost, especially if you look at it as the incremental cost to that seller. In fact, that becomes a minor source of revenue, how much they can withhold and take in. They're providing another service. They're paid for it. But it does flow back. A little bit flows back to each company who has to go through the work.
Okay. Let's get back to the question of online sales, taxable or not. I found some research. This was done by the University of Nebraska and Ohio State University. They analyzed transactions in the 19 states that between 2012 and 2015 started taxing online sales. Because take Amazon, Amazon had established a physical presence in those states. So these university researchers found between 2012 and 2015, the states that started implementing a sales tax on online sales, Amazon sales in those states declined 9.4% after people have to start paying taxes on their online purchases. The bigger the purchase, the greater the decline in sales. This gets to something you pointed out early in the discussion, Dan, that people, whether it's rational or not, they're clicking through and saying, if I got to pay sales tax, heck with it.
Exactly. And I think a lot of people, just sort of in the back of their mind, they don't make the individual calculation. They're just aware, oh, gee, if I do it online, there's no sales tax, so it's going to be cheaper. And if they suddenly hear, oh, there's sales tax there, then, you know. But I think most people don't make conscious calculations for each purchase, but it affects your habits. And are you an early adopter of online sales, or do you still want to go to the brick and mortar store? So, yeah. I mean, the taxes do have consequences in behavior.
And that's been one of the issues, not just in Alaska municipalities that have sales tax, but nationwide. Local merchants say, hey, it's not the proverbial, to use the cliche, level playing field. It's unfair. If someone buys it from me and they have to pay sales tax and they go online and they don't have to pay sales tax and there's free shipping, I can't compete with that. So one argument in favor of a state sales tax, and hopefully the Supreme Court allows taxing online sales, is to level that. So if I buy the widget, whether it's online or across the street or mail order from Anchorage, I'm going to have to pay sales tax. That's been one of the big arguments in this discussion in recent years, is to treat everyone the same.
Yeah, and I think, to my mind, and one of our earlier callers brought it up, I hope the Supreme Court does overturn the physical presence standard. I believe that in our current economy, what's happened over the last 20 years, the state borderlines are sort of artificial. If we're trying to tax all commerce, we're trying to get to all transactions, have a broad base that everybody pays, then we ought to recognize online shopping and remote sellers for what they are, significant piece of it. And if you're taxed at your local bricks and mortar store, you should also be taxed on those transactions.
Right, make it fair. So here's a question. Let's say the Supreme Court sides with South Dakota in this spring early by June, mm-hmm. and says, okay, we don't care if Amazon, or we don't care if Walmart has a presence, or...
Well, they'll probably say presence, physical presence, right, isn't there, but it'll be like if you can be established on the same internet, if you can reach out for something.
Right. So we've got about a minute left. What if they do that? What about Alaska, where there is no state sales tax? Would that allow boroughs and cities here to go out after the online sales?
Yes.
Legally,
yeah. What will happen is once the physical presence standard is removed and changed to something more having to deal more, in the cloud, in the net, whatever, how you want to put it, you can't tell what the Supreme Court is going to do. They may have specific guidelines that would make it difficult for municipalities, but conceptually, at least, I think absolutely what they'll say is that if you can be brought into the economy through internet, then you have the right to tax the transaction. Absolutely, municipalities can go for it. And the interesting question will be, especially for places where there's lots and lots of remote selling, if the base broadens, will you see people lowering taxes? Tax rates, or will you see additional revenues
flowing?
Right, if I'm
getting more revenue, can I lower it? Yeah, and then legally they can do it, but how hard is it going to be to do? So that's it for today. Talk of Alaska on sales taxes. My guest today was Dan Dickinson, former tax director, State Department of Revenue, and an Anchorage CPA. Thank you, Dan. Thank you, our engineer,
thank you, Larry.
Dave Waldron, and everyone else here at Alaska Public Media.
Talk of Alaska is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. This program is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies are available by calling 550-8400. This is Alaska Public Media.